sorry for starting a little late, but there was quite a few people coming down the hall, and I wanted to make sure everybody came in to hear my introduction. Thank you all for coming at the end of a day on a Friday. I appreciate it. This is a much bigger attendance than we even anticipated. Some of you have walked by my booth over the last 2 days and have already met me, but my name is Ann Harris. I live in New Orleans. I am a consultant for ERB, Educational Records Bureau, which is housed in New York City. So there are many of us who consult throughout the United States. We all have different territories that we cover, trying to just go visit schools in our area to help them with the interpretation of their CTP4, their ERB data as it comes into the school. So a big difference just right off the bat when you think of Educational Records Bureau is that we are a very, very small nonprofit organization, and we are here as a service organization versus using Iowa or Stanford or any of those other great tests. You know, they operate under a much bigger umbrella and a much larger company. So, you know, I get probably 20 or 30 emails a day just from the schools that I have worked with, just asking a quick question, telling me they're getting ready to have a parent conference and what they're going to scan me a particular child's scores, and do you mind just telling us what you would say to this parent? And I do that. I mean, it's fun. That's part of what we enjoy doing. We're all educators. I have been in private school education most of my life. Had many different hats, and including teaching third and fourth grade, and then seventh and eighth grade, and then I went into administration and was a guidance counselor at a private school in New Orleans, pretty famous private school in New Orleans because of Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, who both attended that school pre-K through 12, who are now great football players, and of course I groomed both of them as being their middle school counselor. So that's the only thing that I think has truly put Newman School on the map, recently at least. So I became the middle school counselor and then went into being director of testing at their school. Had a great relationship with ERB. Our school had always used the ERB testing for achievement. And I would go to the yearly conference in New York, and finally they came up to me one day and said, "We would love for you to be a consultant in your area." And so I started doing that in conjunction with staying at my private school. And then gradually I pulled away from Newman, and now I just consult with them on a yearly basis as needed, and then operate by traveling all over the place, visiting great schools. How many of you are already members of ERB and using our CTP4? Okay, so quite a few of you. So what I'm going to do, we're doing this in two parts today. Part one is going to be me. I am just going to give you a broad overview of ERB. After I do that, then Doreen, who is the lower school head at Regents here in Austin, is going to show you how she effectively uses the reports that we send to her so that you can have a real person, not one of us who just tells you how great everything is, but somebody who's real, who's been using them for a very, very long time. I'm trying to remember the last time I came to Regents and did a parent night, like 5 years, 4 years ago? 4 years ago. And so we're going to just do that in part. So if you'll just follow along with me for a few minutes, I already told you that the company, Educational Records Bureau, is a nonprofit, was founded in 1927. The important part about Educational Records Bureau is how they came about. The company itself got started because there were so many of the boarding schools and very, very strong private schools in New York City using a variety of tests years and years ago, like the Stanford, like the Iowa, the California Achievement Test, all these other great tests, but all of their children were topping out of these tests. So what I mean by that is that when you look at a bell curve, all of their children were at that 90th to 99th percentile when compared to a national population of children. So they had the saying that they would say, what do we do with this information? We smile and we file it away. And then the next year, we spend thousands of dollars retesting our children, giving them the same achievement test. The same thing happens again. They're all in the top part of the bell curve, but they weren't learning anything from this. So we had a gentleman develop a test that we thought would meet the needs better of private schools. And that's how the ERB company actually came about. We presently, and I apologize, I've been using my laptop more than my transparencies, but we're using transparencies today. We presently have 1,700 members now. This says 1,550. In large part, thanks to the wonderful members of ACCS, do we have such a nice increase in our membership over the last few years. We have truly gained so many great membership schools from ACCS, and we are just so pleased to be able to work with so many of your schools. And I have to tell you that your schools are keeping our bell curve really where it needs to be. I have not visited a classical Christian school yet that did not have really, really strong scores. So if you feel like you can compare yourself to a typical classical Christian school in the United States, depending on what your admission policy is in your city, my guess is your scores are going to look very, very good. But the difference is you are going to have a bell curve, which Doreen will show you in a few minutes with her real data from Regents, what it actually looks like. So we have about 1,700 members. As I said to you, we are nonprofit, and we are a membership organization. That means that our test is not out there being sold to anybody who wishes to have it. You have to join ERB and qualify to be a member. Qualifying means that you are a school that produces primarily all college-bound students, and you have to just sign off that that's what your program is designed to do. You then either need to be an accredited school, or if you are not, because you're in the early stages of your school, that you have two schools in your area, it can be even part of your membership, that recommend you for membership to ERB. We do not fly around to each one of you as you ask for membership to see if you are who you say you are. So we trust when Regents says to us, yes, that is a school that would fit into your membership beautifully. We trust that they're telling us that. So if there is a school in your area that knows you well enough that will do that, that's what you would do on this application to become a member. I want to say it's about $295 to be a member of ERB. Once you are a member, you are invited to many things. Mainly, we have a big conference every year in New York. It's a great week. I highly recommend that. And then in addition to that, you can buy any of our materials. So that's how all of that works, just so you understand where we come from with this company. We pretty much serve private schools. The word independent schools means schools that are private. But we also have a suburban population of public schools that are members of ERB, that also use our products, but they all have the same standards as the private schools, meaning that their students are all college-bound students and are accredited, etc. They have their own set of norms, so we don't mix the private school norms that we're going to give you with the suburban school norms. They have their own set of data. Many years ago, our suburban population used to be huge. It has gotten very, very, very small. Unfortunately, with No Child Left Behind Act, most of our states now, because of being mandated to use their own state testing, it gives them, they have to use that, so that if they also use one of our tests, then they are having to test 2 weeks in a row or at two different times of the year, and that's hard for schools to justify taking classroom time away for 2 weeks. So we've lost a lot of our membership of using our standardized achievement test, but what they've done now is they are using some of our other tests, which I'm going to show you right now. So think of ERB as the umbrella. They're the big company that's sitting up in New York with about 10 employees. And what they have done, and this is what I like so much about ERB, is that they do not have this office full of people who are developing tests and trying to pull in the best people in research and whatever. They actually outsource everything. So this is what I mean by that. The first test under the umbrella of ERB is the CTP4. It stands for Comprehensive Testing Program, 4th edition. This is the achievement test that we offer to our membership, grades 1 through 10. Most of our schools discontinue achievement testing by grade 9. A lot of my schools don't even start achievement testing till grade 3. It just depends on your philosophical reasons behind when you want to start standardized achievement testing. This is a multiple choice test. This is just a very typical achievement test. The difference between the CTP4 and some of the other tests that you might already be using is that we have a verbal and a quantitative reasoning component to the test. And Doreen will show that to you later on in one of her reports. What do I mean by that? What I mean is that they open up the test booklet. This does not start until third grade, but starting in third grade on, they open up the test booklet, and the first test the children take is a test called verbal reasoning. In that first packet that I gave you that has my business card stapled to the top of it, there is, and you'll look at it later, you don't need to pull it now, but there are full definition pages on verbal reasoning and quantitative reasoning. What we are doing for you is we have a test that we have designed that is tapping that child's potential to learn. It is not an achievement test. The verbal and the quantitative tests are tapping that child's capacity to learn. What did they bring to the table? Could some classroom discussion have helped and aided them to maybe produce the score they did? Yes, absolutely. But it is a different format of testing that gives you all, as teachers and administrators, what kind of learner they are. What kind of higher order thinking skills do they have? And then after they take the verbal reasoning section, then we give the straight achievement tests, vocabulary, reading comprehension, a writing mechanics subtest, all these kinds of different subtests in the lower grades, word analysis. Then they go back and take that quantitative reasoning test again, and then we give them a math achievement test. We allow you to look directly at every student to see if they are working to the level that we're telling you they have. That if their higher order thinking skills is up here, are they learning to that level? And that's question number one. And question number two would be, is your school providing a competitive enough curriculum if they're up here, but all of your children, meaning the majority of the grade, is only from not here, but here. So the children generally have a 9 or an 8 stain in their verbal reasoning, but every time they take the vocabulary section, they're only at the 5th or 6th stain, the whole grade as a whole, then it's a curriculum issue. One or the other. If it's just one or two children, then it's a child who's very, very bright, who's not working up to the level that we would have expected them to. CTP4, first test that we offer under the umbrella of the company. Where do we outsource this to? The company ETS, Educational Testing Service in Princeton, New Jersey, who also writes the PSAT, the SAT to get into college, the MCATs to get into medical school, the LSATs to get into law school, they also produce and write our test solely. So right now they're working on a correlational study between the PSAT and the SAT and the results that we get as in schools on the CTP4. But we have used ETS from the very, very beginning. Since 1927, they are the only people who have written our test. We do get volunteer teachers from all over the United States from our private schools to go up to Princeton and help write items when it comes time to revise our editions. But other than that, we are using their research people, their people that are going to put our norms together for us, who are going to do our item writing. They're doing all of that in Princeton, New Jersey. CTP4. The next one is the WRAP, stands for the Writing Assessment Program. Can be given any week during the year, not part of CTP4, not part of our achievement test. This is a writing assessment test where the children are given a prompt. They are asked to write a rough draft on regular notebook paper. They write their rough draft. They can have a dictionary and a thesaurus on their desk. They come back. You collect it. Day two, they come in. You give them very official line paper that's been given to you by this company. They write their final draft on that paper. It is sent to, again, who are we outsourcing this to? Measurements Incorporated. It's in Durham, North Carolina. They're one of the leading companies for writing. They do mostly all of the different states' writing programs. And there are two readers that read every single paper. This is not done online. This is actually done in that office in Durham, North Carolina. And two readers read every paper and score the child's paper in six areas, very similar if you know about the six trait writing program. And so it's everything from overall development to mechanics. I'm not going to go into any of the details. It is in your packets that we gave out to you earlier. But that's the second test that we offer under the umbrella of ERB. You can be a member and use one, all of the tests, none of the tests. That's your choice. I'm just showing you what's available. The third one is the ICE, the Independent School Entrance Exam. That is a test that's used for incoming 5th grade through 12th. It is normed. It is totally correlated to the CTP4 so that when your children's results come in as an admission tool, you can directly compare them if you're already a school using the CTP4. So you would be able to tell immediately, is that child going to be in the middle of the class, at the bottom of the class, at the top of the class, 100% correlated to our CTP4. It's one of those standardized tests, though, that they come in on a Saturday morning, and it's about a three-hour test. It is verbal reasoning, quantitative reasoning, reading comprehension, mathematics, and a writing sample. That's what's included on the IC. The last one, our new baby, Children's Progress. And by the way, ICE, which used to actually be under the umbrella of ETS, we have now switched them to Measurements Incorporated in Durham. So the people writing the ICE are actually also our WRAP people, just because they won the bid and they're just moving so much more into that kind of testing. And so these two tests, both of those are housed out of Measurements Incorporated in Durham. And so my last one, Children's Progress, is also a company based out of New York City. It originated from Columbia University, from the Teachers College there. This was a test for pre-K, K, 1, and 2. It was designed originally for public schools. It is computer adaptive. So the children actually sit at a computer. They have to be able to use a mouse. It takes 20 to 30 minutes. It is formative. It is not norm referenced. And they literally go through a reading and a math component. Both are included. And because it is computer adaptive, every child will not necessarily be on the same page because depending on how bright they are or if they are struggling on an item, they could go and see a different screen than the child who is getting every answer right. They will move into a different direction. Computer adaptive, meaning that once a child finishes it, you literally push a button as a teacher and you instantly have a teacher report on that child. Classroom data on your whole class the minute they finish. School-wide data once you're completed your whole school. It is absolutely amazing. And so what we did is we had Children's Progress write a program for us that was for private schools. So we have Children's Progress now under our umbrella producing a test that would meet the needs for our independent schools who were struggling with using the CTP4 as early as first grade, feeling like they didn't want the children sitting through a week-long, bubbling in, sort of somewhat stressful type of assessment. They love this. It is so user-friendly. They ask when they can take it again. They don't know they're taking a test. Some of the little ones do. I had a precious child say to me one day when I was giving it in a school, turned to me and said, I don't know the answer to this. He was in pre-K. He said, I don't know the answer to this, but that little boy over there, he'll know all of them. So they know. The children within a classroom, they absolutely know. I mean, it was great. And I said, that's okay. Everybody's not supposed to know every answer. But the beauty of this children's progress is that it can be given 3 to 5 times a year. We change it fall, winter, spring, but you actually can give it even in between. And what I personally love about it is that it prevents some of the small children from slipping through the cracks to ensure that they really are learning single-digit addition, or do they really know their lowercase letters, or are they just highly verbal and sort of pulling the wool over the teacher's eyes? So I have just enjoyed tremendously using this program, and I gave you a brochure on that too. So I think ERB has finally covered all their bases. We have pre-K assessment all the way through 12th grade on the writing assessment test. And so that just gives you a little bit of background about, you know, most people see that logo ERB and don't understand that we have a lot more than just that. If you came from any school that used the ERBs, you will never hear the word CTP4. You will never hear the word RAP hardly. All you will hear the children say is, we're taking the ERBs this week. It means nothing. It's the name of our company. But somehow that caught on many, many years ago, has continued to, and so we just have to stay with it also. So you will hear, if you ask people in a community, what test do you use? They're not going to say we use the CTP4. They're going to say, oh, we're an ERB-using school. So, okay. So that I'm just filling you in. So go back to the CTP4, which is what Doreen's going to speak on right now. This is why most of the schools who adopt the CTP4 do this, providing the best program match for our member schools. We meet the standards of National Council of Teacher of Mathematics. Our reading comprehension is assessed across the curriculum. If you notice, we don't offer a science or a social studies component to our test because we believe that we do not want to dictate to our private schools what they should be teaching in science and what they should be teaching in history, that if you have taught your children to be amazing readers and to comprehend what they're reading, that they will do fine in any textbook that you design for your children, whatever program, whether you want it to be U.S. history or their state history course in fourth grade, that we're not worried about what you're teaching them, but can they pull out the important information from those textbooks? When we go and move into a computer program, which will be in like 2012, we will be offering a science add-on on the computer if you want it, just because some of our schools have begged us for it. So we are writing a science subtest, but it will be an optional subtest. You do not have to do it as part of our CTP4. And then in the early grades, grades 1 through 3, we also offer an auditory comprehension subtest where the teacher is reading the passage to the child. They're answering multiple choice questions. And we do this to benefit the child who might auditorily be able to tell you what a main idea is, tell you an inference question, give you all of those drawing conclusion answers, but just have not become great fluid readers yet. So we want to be able to show you if they are fabulous in auditory comprehension. I can guarantee you developmentally they will be good readers. It just hasn't happened yet. So that's what we offer. We also offer constructed response items as an add-on to any of our achievement tests. If you are a school that you want them to have that opportunity to write out an answer to a question in reading comprehension or math, we offer that as an addition to our program. Last but not least, here we go. So what did we provide for you? Schools with rigorous standards, Those are the types of people who make up our independent school pool. Schools that want to compare themselves to other really good schools. Schools with a majority of college-bound students. Schools that want to improve student performance, instructional programs, and curriculum decisions. And I have never been to a school, I've been doing this for 17 years now, I have never been to a school that did not say to me, the data did not do this for us. Because you're having such cream of the crop children all in your pool, somebody does fall to the bottom of that bell curve, so that you literally can take that look into your program to see where your strengths and weaknesses are. Any questions before Doreen just sort of takes over, shows some reports?
Can you just comment on your
quality frameworks? Okay, sure. Some schools opt to be fall testing schools. That starts you at the beginning of the school year, right after Labor Day, takes you through February 28th. That's our fall norm period. That means if you opt to be a fall school, you will only be compared to children who took it in the fall. We have a big enough base that we have two sets of norms. And then starting March 1st through the end of June are our spring norms. Popularity-wise, we have more children using this, or more schools using spring norms. Just generally, schools like that end of the year, this is showing us what we did. Personally, I love fall norms. I love that the children take it maybe in October after they've gotten back into their school year. They've gone through their basic review of the year before. They're moving on into the grade level that they're presently in. And so if they're in fourth grade, they're actually, when they're fall testing, they are taking the third grade test booklet. We do not have a fall testing test booklet. So our test booklets are numbered level 1 through 10, grade 1 through grade 10. If you're a fall testing school, then you cannot give our test at first grade. You can only start it in second, because the second grade fall testing is actually using our first grade book from spring. So what you are doing, which I love about fall testing, is you are really seeing if the children have retained everything they learned from the year before. And I love that part of it. I just think it really gives you great diagnostic information. If you as a third grade teacher thought that you did a very thorough job of teaching antonyms and synonyms, and then they move into fourth grade and they take that third grade spring test booklet and they missed all their antonym and synonym questions, excuse me, but they didn't retain it. You know, you taught it in May and they were tired and you were tired and they just didn't get it. And so it then gives these teachers the whole part of the next school year before it's too late to reteach something like that. But I do understand the spring testing. The school I worked at for years was a spring testing school. They loved having the summer to pore over the data. They felt like the administrators had more time to really look at it, that when it comes in December or comes in January, everybody's so busy with that, just the daily life of school, that they didn't feel like they had enough time to really digest the fall information. So it's just two ways of thinking, whatever works for your school, but our norm pools are very, very, very sound for each one, so it doesn't matter as far as that goes. Any other?
Yes.
The national norms. ETS actually takes part of the budget that we allow them, which is about $3 million right now. Then when we redesign our tests, which is every 10 years, so we move from like edition 3 to edition 4 every 10 years, they actually go out into the field and do a random selection of schools, public, private, parochial, urban, rural, inner city. We go in, we pay these schools dearly to go into their schools. And we might go into a huge public school that has 1,000 children and give reading comprehension to all 1,000 children. We're in and out of there in 45 minutes. But we've gotten 1,000 bodies of children of testing. And then we move to another school in another part of another state. It is mind-boggling to tell you how this all works, but we pull it all together. The people who work for ETS know how many bodies of children we need to then bring it back to ETS and aggregate the norms, and we give you a national norm. We do not test a national population every year. We only test our membership, which is 1,700 schools. So, you know, but we have let our norms stand up to the Stanfords, the Iowas. They have stood up solidly. ETS has even told us that we do not need to recreate these norms every 10 years. They look exactly the same. It would take something unbelievable to change in the world of education to change norms that are this, you know, big from populations this large. But we always recreate these norms every 10 years. But that's where our national population comes from. Okay, one more question, and then Doreen is on. Yes. Yeah, you know, I didn't check the website before I came here. Do you remember, Doreen? I can tell you this. It's not a huge number. I would say I could look, and I don't have my spring norms book with me. I could give you bodies of children. If you'll just send me an email, my business card is at the top of that. I can look in my current spring norms book and just send you back in an email and at least give you by grade level how many children. I can't tell you how many schools, but I'll be able to look in my norms book and say there were 200 children. But I can tell you this. Those norms are not what we would call reliable norms. I mean, there's not enough of you yet. What Doreen and I have discussed many times is that the children's scores, their ACCS norms, and their independent school norms are almost neck to neck. And I think what you're going to find out, but I think we had to do this to prove to some of our associations that your association is so strong that you're going to mirror our independent school norms. And you're not going to feel like you need probably association norms in 10 years from now because you look so similar to our present independent school norms. But we're doing it, and we're working on it as quickly as we can. And as more schools join ERB and then ask for the association norms, you know, then we can just give you more and more data on that. Thank you, guys. I'm actually rushing out the door in about 5 minutes to catch an airplane, the only flight to New Orleans tonight. There will be, Matt just walked out to go back to the booth, but there'll be a young man named Matt at my booth tomorrow morning. I've given you my business card. Doreen knows where to find me. So if you don't see me after this talk, it's because I've scooted out to the airport.
Thank you. Does anybody have any other question for Ann before she runs out the door here? One more here. Oh, goodness. I really remember the year we did that. the 95-96 school year changed from Stanford to ERB, and there was a line out the door of parents wanting to know why their students had scored so poorly on their achievement test. What we didn't know at that time is one of the things we could have done when we made that change is to invite Ann to come and do a parent meeting. And so we handled it on our own. I would advise you to contact ERB, contact Ann, and say, we're making this change. Could you please come and explain to our parent population about those about the test and what they're going to see when they have the results to the test.
If I could further answer that, you don't have to give just the independent norms. You can give the national and the independent norms and have to give an explanation for why they're different, but they can still also see that, well, we have, it's not as though we've taken a slide.
Right.
And some of our right. schools still today only give national norms to the parents, but they keep the independent school column in-house. So they're still using it for their diagnostic purposes, but they only only show what they used to show. So, I mean, that's an option, too. You can just forget about that. You don't have to put any fires out.
True. True. We do choose to show independent school norms and national norms on the reports that we send home and the ACCS norms that we send home to our parents. I'm just going to take you on a little trip through several of the reports. Those of you who are using ERB are familiar with these reports. Those of you who are not, this will give you an opportunity to see what kind of information you could receive. I will not be telling you everything about each report. We would need to be here for quite a while in order to do that. So I'm just going to hit some high points. The first report that I want us to look at is the administrator's summary. This is the one that Ann was talking about that had the bell curves on it. What you see here are the three norm groups of the national norms, suburban norms, and the independent school norms. And that is what our school looks like in, what test do I have here? Verbal reasoning. This is what our, and I don't know what year this was, but this is what our school looked like that year. And you'll see the normal bell curve right here. These are stay-nines. I have found it a lot easier to talk to parents about stay-nines than percentages. It's easier to understand, and it gives them a grouping that they can understand. Stay-nines 1, 2, and 3 are considered below average. 4, 5, and 6 are average, and 7, 8, and 9 are above average. In the national norms, we look wonderful. Look at that. You know, that's pretty impressive. But if you move, down here. See, that's 80% of our students were above average in national norms. 21% were average and zero at below average. But then you take the norm group and you move, and we do not spend a lot of time looking at suburban norms. When I give my report to the board, they see national norms, but we talk about independent school norms. And now with ACCS norms, we do mention that. Thank you very much. Okay, and you notice what a change there was. Now we fall into that bell curve. And we do have, you know, somebody always has to be on the bottom end of it. So we do have a 20% that were below average. And this was in the verbal reasoning test. What the board wants to know when we give our reports is this normal or do we have a problem? And so we want to give them, we give them these graphs on all of the different tests. I'll show you another one here. Just show you how they change. This, Ann told us many years ago, this is the test that proves whether or not you're teaching. This is the writing mechanics test. You know, the reasoning tests have to do with what innate abilities the students have, and the achievement tests have to do with how much they have achieved. But writing mechanics, there's nothing innate about it. You have to teach it. You have to teach punctuation. You have to teach capitalization and all the things that go in writing mechanics. So it's a good picture of whether or not we're teaching. And again, you will see across the bottom the percentages in each one of those major categories. Now, I'm going to show you something really interesting with using these graphs. This is from several years ago, but this was the verbal reasoning test And isn't that pretty with that nice yellow color? Then we took and overlaid that with the quantitative reasoning. And one of the things that we found is we have a fairly well-balanced school. And that's one of the things you can do with that information. You take your two reasoning and put them together. Okay, one more, just so you can see a variety of charts here. Do all of them look that beautiful? No. No.
Does she have a great population of children?
Yes, we have a wonderful population of children. Okay, another report that is an optional report that you can get from ERB that has really given us some good information is an achievement reasoning consistency analysis. And in this particular report, the students' names, of course, are over here, and I've blocked those out. But if you look at reasoning tests and then achievement tests, you may have a student who has very good reasoning skills, but their achievement is below. That's what this is right here. And it's by name, so we know which student that is. Then you may have a student who has, you know, fairly good reasoning skills, but their achievement is as much as 2 to 3 stay nines higher than what their reasoning skills are. And this just gives us that picture by student. Then we can say to a parent who, we can confidently say, your student's not really working up to the potential that they've shown us. So this is just an extra report that you can order. It's a 2 stay 9 difference, right? A 1 stay 9 difference sometimes is just a matter of 5%. So it has to be 2 stay 9 difference. Okay, now this is a report that the teachers and administrators get, and actually it's a putting together of the little sticky thing that you can put in your file. It's just a picture of that, but it's all put together in one place so that the teacher or the administrator can look at this and say, it looks like your entire class is having problems in this particular area. Or, this is a very high area. One of the things I tell teachers is if you give this test 3 years in a row, I can tell you where your passion is. If your passion is in the humanities or in math, I can tell from this test because the students are going to reflect where your passion is. But this gives you all in one place national norms, independent school norms, the class norms, the school norms. And then we have the ACCS norms. This was this year. So this is one of the classes. You can also see here, this is what Ann and I have been talking about, that the ACCS norms and the independent school norms are running very close together. It will vary with child, but for the most part, they're running very close together. We're going to look at that over the next several years as that norm group, hopefully, from some of you, will increase. By looking at this, you can talk about individual students who might need some intervention, but you can also talk about methodologies that a teacher might need to use to improve the student's achievement in any one of those subtest areas. Another part of the class roster report is looking at the information like this. And this is a comparison at these three percentiles, the 20th, the 50th, and the 75th percentile, and it is a comparison of your national norms and your suburban norms, your independent school norms, all three of those. And on that, on the graph, you can see if I want to compare my class norms with the independent school norms, then I'm going to look at these boxes over here, and the line within the box is where you are, and the box is the variance that you could have. So you can see in the very first verbal reasoning test up there, the independent school norms are running. Let me see if I can point to the right place, right here. And you go up and you find us, and we're a little bit below that in that particular test. Not much, but a little. Okay, then one of the reports that our teachers really like is the item analysis. One of the things, one year a parent was very upset, came in, my daughter has... she has a stay nine of 2, and she's never had a stay nine below 4. So what's going on? What's wrong with this? I went back and looked at the item analysis report. And what I found very interestingly was she had skipped one. She had skipped one of the numbers. And because it had an O, which said omit, which means that one was omitted. And then if you ran down, she was running one off. She missed a few in there, but it was very interesting. And she was a fourth grader. Fourth grade is the first time they're not marking in a booklet. They're going from a booklet to an answer sheet. And that's exactly what we believe happened to her, which, of course, gave her a score lower than she would have had just following probability. So that's one thing you can find out sometimes. Another thing that you can discover from this test, what you have up here are students' names next to each number. You can follow one student down. In fact, I think I have one that shows that. Well, I don't see it. But you can follow one student down, like right here, number one, and find out how many they missed. Now, that's a good number to have, but what does that mean? If you look over here to the left, you see the goal or the... or the kind of question that it was. And this particular thing, this came out of the quantitative reasoning. So it was. These are all questions related to considering numerical quantities in various forms and comparing sizes. So you can find out which particular goal was a problem. Here's the first part of that. Another thing to look at is if you look across right here, you noticed everybody said B. The answer for that one question, that's just one question, but the answer for that one question, everyone said B. It's probably that either they were taught something incorrectly or they haven't been taught at all and they're all reasoning in that same direction, which is not unusual either. But one of the things that happened with us that we discovered in the item analysis, and this has been like 6 or 7 years ago, was in reading comprehension. And we were finding those questions where we don't know what the specific question is, but we know what the general area was. And we were finding a lot of that under inference in reading comprehension. And we were finding it in the third grade and in the fifth grade, but not in the fourth. So we went back and looked at how were these teachers teaching the skill of inference in those grade levels, and found that in one of the grade levels they weren't even consciously teaching anything about inference. And in the other grade level, they were teaching it at a level where the kids didn't quite understand. So we made modifications to the teaching methodologies. Another thing that we discovered was that we needed to pay more attention to the reading skills than we were, and it led to a shift in the curriculum guide in order to put more emphasis in those areas where we were showing up weak. Now, another thing that can happen is you can have something like this, and you can know that your students had not been taught that particular thing yet. Is that okay? If it's okay, if you're fine with that, then you know that that's where you're going to see that kind of result every year, and that's fine. That isn't a problem. It doesn't mean that we have to make curriculum changes every time we see something like this. But it does alert us to, are we not doing everything that that we could do? So this is why this particular report is helpful. Now, I'm going to show you one. Here is a teacher who took this report and went crazy. But she was looking for what were the problem areas in the things that she taught. She said to me her weakest area was in math. It's not her passion. And she said, but I want the students in my class to be better math students, because she kept seeing this kind of thing. And so I said, so what are you going to do about it? So we came up with three strategies for her to improve her teaching in math. And guess what? The next year, the scores went up. So it's a very valuable tool when you teach the teachers how to use it. Okay, when you're sending home a report, this report is like reports that first and second graders, parents of first and second graders will receive. They do not receive a normed report, because during those kinder and first and second grade years, everything is so fluid and every child develops differently. And therefore, we don't want to say, oh, your child is Your child is below average, and give them the idea that that's the way life is always going to be, because it won't be. It will change. So they give the results as exceeds expectations, or meets expectations, or developing, and therefore the parent can see where my child is really moving quickly, where my child is right on target, and, you know, where we might need to be encouraging them. So it's more of a narrative report. That's what the parent report looks like for first and second grade. As you move up, this is the report that we send home. Now, there's two different parent reports that you can send for third through 11th grade. This is the one we have chosen to do. It's a little more information. Some schools do not want parents to have this much information. But what it shows in the top, it gives the comparisons of National Independent School and ACCS norms. But the chart at the bottom gets more specific. And what we do is we look at that 50% line. What is below? Where are the diamonds that are below 50%? And in this particular case, you will see that those things. They've taken the verbal reasoning and they've shown the parent that there are three different areas in verbal reasoning. There is analogical reasoning, categorical reasoning, and logical reasoning. And they can know what particular kind of reasoning is more of a problem. And then what they do is they come to me and they say, okay, now I know that it's logical reasoning. What does that look like? And I sometimes will pull out the item analysis that you saw, depending on what it is. But this report lets parents know more specifically what they're dealing with as far as their child goes. Now, the other report we can send home with parents is this one. And this is the one we do not use this one. And you can see it still just leaves your major titles of the achievement of each subtest. But they have a chart very similar to the one that was on that teacher class roster that shows where their child is and what range they could be in. So this is a report that could go home. But I'm right on it. Okay, one more. Let me show you this. This is what we call an individual instructional summary, and this is one of the most valuable tools for the teacher who has that child the next year. This takes all of that information you saw and puts it on. This is for one child right here, and puts it giving you the very explicit goals that are under each one of those tests. And it shows where the student's strengths and weaknesses are. What we do is we take these, we divide them out, and give them to the next year's teacher. And at the beginning of the year, that teacher can say, it looks like I'm going to have to pay attention to this child's, here's one right here, in style and craft in writing. You notice there were 8 problems. They got... they attempted 4 and only got 1 right. Something was going on. And then one of their areas of strength was probably an organization. So a teacher can make decisions about how to instruct a child from for this next year. Where do I need to pay attention for them? Yes.
I'm woefully ignorant. This is way more information. I'm a board member. I'm not an educator.
Okay.
That's why we didn't do this, trainers. So I'm looking at it from a practical standpoint. It looks to me like we're going to this test because we're at the far high end of the other national tests, and this gives us some room to improve our education.
Right.
So would you say, in your use of this, is this actually a better diagnostic tool than anything out there that you've seen?
It's better than what we were doing.
So when we look at talking to parents, I'm not going to be giving them details because, frankly, like I said, that's why I have administrators. But when a parent says, well, why are the scores down here? Is it simply the fact of the matter that this is a tougher test and we're going to this so that we've got room to improve and grow more?
That is very true. It's not just how your child is doing, it's also a picture of how we are doing as a school. If we want to improve what we are doing as a school, we need something to help us measure. Yes, sir.
And I would just add to that, I think on the ERB website, you can look at the member schools by state.
Yes.
You can say to your parents, not only is the test rigorous, but you need to understand you're comparing yourself to a very select group of schools.
Right.
So your scores are going to be lower because you're not comparing with the general population. And you can actually tell them which schools are giving this test.
Exactly.
I'll make that point.
My point is, if parents have specific questions about it, I'm going to send them to the administrator or the teacher.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Once we got past that first year, everybody learned how to read this, and we were we did great as far as parents go. You know, they follow us very well now. Yes, ma'am.
Is it true that this is a time test?
Yes, this is a time test. Now, you can take it as non-standard, but what happens is your statistics don't come back with that particular group. It's, in fact, separate from. Yes, ma'am.
How long, let's say, is a school decided that they would like to take this test when they were accredited or sponsored by another school? Is it possible to decide now in the summer that we want to take it in the fall and be prepared?
And be prepared. Yeah, you could. If you have two sponsors to tell ERB, yes, you would be able to pay your membership and be ready for the fall, if not for the spring. Yes.
You have a student that is really, you know, lagging behind academically, but you just have the student in the school because you really want to do the student and the family service. Can that student be omitted from the test? Does the student have to take the test? Can he be omitted from the test, or when he takes the test, can his score be omitted? Or?
If you take a non-standard test, if you take the test in a non-standard format, then it comes back separate from all your other statistics. It's really basically the philosophy of your school, and sometimes on an individual basis.
But if you took it as a standard test, then every student has to be included.
No, I mean there can be individual students who are not included.
Okay.
That's up to you. Yes, ma'am. You can get a catalog downstairs at the booth, and it should have the costs in there. I can't speak to the costs. Yes, ma'am.
Do you also use this for admissions?
We use the IC that she was talking about for admissions, yes. We do, for fifth grade and up.
And you give that in-house just as you need it, as people apply, or
we have, our admissions director is qualified to give the IC, but what she generally does is waits till she has a significant group, and we also cooperate with schools in our area that give the IC, so sometimes it will be on our campus, sometimes it will be on someone else's campus, but it's given several times during the year in order to give us that information fairly quickly. Yes, ma'am.
Could you clarify something for me? Anne mentioned that those two sections of the 64 are students' potential.
Both the verbal reasoning and the quantitative reasoning are potential. Okay. The others are achievement.
So now are they on this?
Yes. Verbal reasoning is right there at the top. And then quantitative reasoning's right down here, right above mathematics 1 and 2.
So how do you communicate that
with
teachers? Well, how do
teachers
use that knowledge?
Well, when we're explaining to parents how to read the test, we explain what the difference between those reasoning tests are and the achievement tests. And it's a learning process for them as well. But we explain the difference because the reasoning, you know, I had one dad who said, but my daughter's verbal reasoning changes every year. Well, it will. It's as fluid as achievement is, but it is different questions that are pulled out that are divided for the kind of reasoning that they needed to have in order to. And it's been real educational for our parents to deal with that information and then say, so what do I need to be doing during the summer or at home or to help in this process? And they've become real partners with the teacher in the classroom. But we're all talking. We all have to learn to talk the same language. Anybody else? Well, we are 10 minutes past, so thank you very much.